stupid. He comes across in front of me every single time he overtakes. Where does he want me to go off the track?
No!
Stop talking to me in the braking zone.
In one or many pieces, Formula One is coming home. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
You are the world champion!
Hello! Welcome to episode 148 of the Motorsport 101 podcast. Filling in for an absent Andre Harrison, who will be back next week, I am RJ O'Connell from Motorsport 101's second American headquarters in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Not Nashville. Though that would be kind of nice if I actually lived there, but that's a little bit more expensive, but we won't dwell too much on that. We have Ryan King, who has always been with us. Say hi, Ryan, from Brooklyn, New York.
Well, it's the Bronx, and it's so hot. It is so hot, guys.
That's fine. It's so hot that we kind of forgot what city we're in. Man, how hot is it over there?
For those who speak in Celsius, we're like pushing 35.
Man, it's so hot. It might even break down under stress after 64 laps out of 71.
I wouldn't mind that.
filling in from the undisclosed secret location, we have noted Formula E correspondent back on the show with us, Hazel Southwell.
I'm not in an airport.
It's been too long.
That's why you said undisclosed location, because it is not an airport.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to break the mystique, but it's a full week before I head to New York. In fact, longer than a full week. I've been home for ages. So yeah, I'm actually coming to you from my house in East Ham, which is a very trendy and exclusive part of London that everyone wants to live in.
I'm just going to take your word for it.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds good, right? Like, East things are cool.
Yes, things like East Coast, things that LeBron does not have to worry about anymore. Just anything East related.
I'm not going to have to find out what a LeBron is for this episode, am I?
Man, when I turn 34 years old, I too want to get paid $150 million.
Oh damn, man, that's 3 years off for me.
But 13% tax, that's way too high, guys.
Okay.
13%.
Oh. For those who don't know, that is in reference to a tweet by IndyCar driver Graham Rahal, who complained that the highest tax bracket in the state of California was too high at
13%.
13%?
Like, we've got a whole bunch of people, like, you know, obviously there's all the drivers that moved to Monaco and the people who dodged tax from the UK and whatever. But our higher rate tax is 50.
Well, it's state tax. So basically, in the U.S., you get taxed twice. Once by the state government, and another time by the federal government.
Oh, okay, right. Okay, that's like marginally more reasonable.
Yeah.
Right. So we're going to talk about all the goings-on at the Formula One Austrian Grand Prix, which, if you're like myself and fell asleep from massive exhaustion due to unrelated reasons, you probably would have thought at the first lap that this was just going to be another box standard race and Lewis Hamilton was going to pad his points lead. As it turns out, things didn't quite pan out like that. We'll also be talking about...
I just want to raise that it's really very homophobic that there's a triple header at the end of Pride Month. And that the end of the triple header of the British Grand Prix is on the same weekend as London Pride.
Oh, goodness. Yeah,
they just hate the gays. I just want to bring this up.
That's wonderful. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Formula 2.
But that's why we're all tired.
With new rolling starts and two British championship leaders in both Formula 2 and GP3. That's right. Formula 1 in time is coming home. It's coming home, lads. There is also many other things to cover, including record-breaking runs at the Nürburgring Nordschleife and the Pikes Peak Hill Climb. We've got fun finishes in America with NASCAR and IMSA. We've got a mini recap of Super GT. All of that and more in a very packed episode. And of course, you can listen to this and check out all of our great content at motorsport101.com. We are on youtube.com/motorsport101. Facebook.com/motorsport101. Our Twitter handle is motorsport_101. If you want to follow us personally, we are at Harrison101HD for Dre, at RJ O'Connell for myself, at Ryan Eric King, that's with two K's for Ryan, and Hazel is H Southwell FE. And if you would like to back us financially, you can back us on patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 tier gets you early access to this show and to Bike Live on the Motorsport 101 network, where I'm sure we're going to talk about who that I heard things about that TT acid.
Let's not even get into that. We've got enough to get on with.
Oh, goodness. I've heard very, very erotic things about that race.
We've all seen Andrea's Instagram story.
Yes, we'll get into all that. That's right. $5 gets you early access to both shows. For $10, you can join our Discord server and listen to these shows live as they're being recorded, because sometimes the best and probably the least speakable jokes end up on the cutting room floor.
Holy shit, people listen into this.
Yeah.
Yes. We have Zoe Hamilton, who's always here crashing in our pad, and Brian Glennon, who's listening with us. Thank you so much to everybody who continues to support the show. We're continuing to get backers left and right. Thank you so much for enjoying everything that we do. Right, because we got a lot to cover here, so let's get right to it. What the fuck is an iTime? Let's crack into the Austrian Grand Prix.
So this was last weekend during the French Grand Prix.
Yeah.
A few teams were kind of pissed off about the whole triple header situation.
Oh yeah.
Particularly Haas, Günther Steiner said that it was great if Toto Wolff had said that you know, this is an exciting challenge, it's fun to have it as a new thing in Formula One. But Mercedes can afford more motorhomes. They literally, motorhomes that you have at the back of the paddock, they just get a new one in Austria. So they're not transporting that from France to Austria. They're not transporting it subsequently to the UK. As I understand it, they've literally just, the one from France went to the UK and they had a spare one in Austria. The smaller teams have to haul everything. Obviously, everyone's got to haul the cars, everyone's got to haul the team by various methods.
Yes.
And the teams were paying for truck drivers just to run triple shifts to drive through the night. So as soon as one came off, you literally pulled over to a lay-by, swapped guys, the next one came on in order to get to the track. When you think about it, in leaving Spielberg today, probably realistically a few might have got out overnight, but there was pretty torrential rains in both locations. Yeah. So if the chances are, even if you can get some trucks out, a lot will be leaving now, or not now, but earlier this morning. It's Monday we're recording this, I think. Right. It's Monday.
Yes, it is Monday, July the 2nd. And
I'm a freelancer. I don't know what's going on.
People are still stuck in traffic from the French Grand Prix. I'm pretty sure of it.
But yeah, so the haulage is now moving. If you've got to get it from Austria to the UK, then even if you've driven all night, you're probably just reaching the UK and you've got to go straight on to Silverstone.
I think they could do it if they presented in the form of a Top Gear challenge.
Oh my god.
But yes.
I mean, I think that basically is how it's been presented to the smaller teams, in that they are just having to make things go. I mean, they've literally got, like, basically roadside recovery as part of their convoy, because they don't have enough trucks to have one break down.
Yeah, right.
that's not per se the case for some of the other teams. They can, some of them, especially Haas, obviously Haas have an additional problem of not being UK, not being Europe based. So there's all kinds of things. But anyway, so Toto Wolff said it was a great, exciting thing. And that actually this was a cool challenge for Formula One teams. And that, yeah, it was going to be tiring, but Mercedes were totally up for it. And the little teams were like, we're really fucking not. Like, we don't want to do this. This is a huge strain on budgets. This is impossible strain on personnel, you know, whatever. Like, they can't necessarily cycle through loads and loads of pit crew and things, you know. They can't rest staff. This is brutal. I noticed Haas didn't actually do that badly.
As we'll come to find out, all of Toto Wolff's excitement might have been a little bit misplaced. Although after qualifying, King, it looked like you could just have popped on the highlights and expected this race to go to form after Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas locked out the front row with Bottas in pole, Hamilton in second, the Ferraris on row two. Mercedes have a brand spanking new engine update that's ready for these cars this time. And you're thinking, oh boy, this is the part where, right, Ferrari, they've had their fun, but they missed an opportunity in France. Mercedes got this new engine. This is
Mercedes have had the new engine since France.
Oh, yes. Yes. So this is where, you know, obviously, with this being more of a power track, unit. It's going to be more advantageous to the Mercedes. Like, this was going to be the hammer blow. And qualifying certainly gave us that expectation. Which is why I kind of just dozed off after the first hour. I'm sorry. I got back from the most attended soccer game in the world on Saturday. Take that, Russia. That's what happens when you get to watch Atlanta United hang four on them on Orlando. We are the undefeated Kings of the South. Bring us a new rivalry, please. But I digress. Yeah, I dozed off about lap one after Kimi Raikkonen went offline a couple of times and the Mercedes broke out to a 1-2 start. I was thinking, right, this one's about done and dusted. So I wake up around lap 50 and a lot has happened. And it takes by the time Lewis Hamilton breaks down. That's a thing that happened in this race. Lewis Hamilton broke down. We'll get to that. It took by that time to realize, like, what am I watching?
Yeah, like things drastically changed pretty much right at the first lap because the pole sitter was not even in the lead after the first corner.
Right. Hamilton got the jump on Bottas, and Kimi Raikkonen actually would have got the jump on both of them. Got squeezed out in the middle, went wide at turn one, then went wide again at turn three. Both the Ferraris went wide at turn three. That gave the Red Bulls of Daniel Ricciardo and Max Verstappen an opportunity to pounce. Things do start to get a little bit weird once we get to around lap 12 when Nico Hülkenberg's engine pops.
Yeah, the teapot. The yellow wet teapot.
Yep. Let's just say Hulkamania went from wild to mild and then the wild again because, whoo, that was a spectacular-looking curb blammo out of the back of that bright yellow and black Renault. But two laps later, we have the first big retirement of the race when Valtteri Bottas suffers a hydraulics problem that knocks him out of the race from second. And this causes car to stop on track and brings out a virtual safety car. Now, if you're a strategist, are you thinking that a virtual safety car is like the perfect time to bring your car in for a routine pit stop?
That's debatable considering it was not that close to the pit stop window. It was questionable.
Out of all this, Max Verstappen of the Red Bull camp, Red Bull decides to see an opportunity to pounce, and they bring him in to put him on the soft tires. You know, it's marginal, but he might be able to make it to the race on this one set of tires and, you know, not have completely fallen off the cliff. It's a calculated risk and one that they brought him in for. Mercedes leaves Lewis Hamilton out because he has a comfortable lead, and why should Mercedes... why should Mercedes think on the fly? This is the optimal strategy at the time. They bring him in on lap 26 with the full confidence that they would have easily still brought him out in the lead of this race. And he comes out in the lead, and, well, he's actually not in the lead anymore. He's trailing Max Verstappen and Kimi Raikkonen and Sebastian Vettel as well, I believe.
No, Hamilton was able to get out just ahead of Sebastian, but behind Kimi.
Yeah, so now you have a Red Bull and a Ferrari up ahead. This is not ideal.
Oh, and then you could tell that he immediately knew that this was not ideal over the team radio.
Gosh, again, you're going to have to fill me in on a lot of this stuff. Because, again, I was, like, just zonked out completely. And there's only so much you can glean from the highlights package.
So, pretty much, Hamilton knew that his tires were going to get hot. Started getting hot. And pretty much told the team that he was in a situation. They kind of needed to instruct him to find some way around the tire heating issue so he could push and try to get around Kimi Raikkonen.
Yes, and that ultimately does not happen. By the way, I did catch, and I don't recall which point of the race that this exactly happens, but Sebastian Vettel might have had one of his best career overtakes going into Turn 3 on Lewis Hamilton.
Yes, it happens around this point where he gets overtaken by Sebastian Vettel. Hamilton's clearly out of it. He's not focused on the race. He's more focused on his tires and worried about not, you know, he's pushing them past the limit, and he's wearing them out far more quickly than anyone else. And pretty much chief strategist James Fowles gets on the radio and pretty much takes all responsibility for the strategic blunder at the virtual safety car to try
now,
to.
That's interesting. Now that's interesting that you said James Fowles had done the strategy, because if you listen to certain other alternative F1 media outlets, they'll tell you that somebody else was in charge of the strategy altogether. But you know, we're not here to pump up amateur operations. We're here to pump up ourselves, a well-run professional unit.
Yeah, because when the chief strategist gets on the radio and tries to calm down Lewis Hamilton, hopefully you think that would calm him down, but no, it did not. He kept going on the radio. It did not solve anything.
Right. Out of all of this, Hamilton, I believe, has to pit a second time.
Yes.
And but even after pitting, he's still going to have enough points in hand. He is running fourth with about 10 laps to go. Sebastian Vettel's right ahead. And even though this is not the ideal race, Lewis Hamilton knows that he's still bagged enough points to where he still holds his championship lead going into the British Grand Prix at Silverstone.
Until
then,
his
on lap 64,
his fuel system fails.
Oh. This is the first double DNF for Mercedes. This is not the first double DNF for Mercedes, but it's the first double mechanical DNF for Mercedes since 1955. You're going to have to go back to the first iteration of Mercedes.
Yeah, their first double mechanical failure at Mercedes since the 1955 season.
That is wild. How in the hell?
I feel like that can't possibly be true.
Yeah, because they never had they've never had both cars suffer mechanical failures. Usually when they have a double, like, retirement, one car's mechanical failure and the other car crashes out.
Right. And, of course, we remember Barcelona
oh,
2016.
Yeah, when both cars crashed out.
Yes, both cars crashed out at the same time, and people had very strong feelings about this, one way or another. So with both Mercedes out, and the Ferraris still having a pretty good but not ideal race. Remember when we mentioned that Max Verstappen was able to come in and that virtual safety car might have been able to make it last? Well, guess what? He did! After all the criticism over his early season form, all the criticism of his mistakes, which were, you know, fairly justified, he's turned it around, and Max Verstappen, the bandit's back! The bandit rides again. He has won the Austrian Grand Prix. And for the first time ever, Red Bull Racing win at the Red Bull Ring, a track that normally does not suit them or their cars. But they did it. By Jove, they did it. Did you see the Max Verstappen grandstands? It's like a sea of orange.
Yeah, that was, man, that there was a crowd pop with like two laps to go. And there are very few times where you can audibly hear the crowd over like the TV audio, but man, you could hear them roar.
Yeah, this, none of this was piped in, brother. This was all true pop. They don't pipe this in like the boys down south.
Oh, dear.
So, this is the Mats Verstappen that I think were... What, this is...
Is it
this
really? Is it really? Because this was Max Verstappen... I mean, like, to some extent, yes, this is what was sold, which is he can take advantage of others' errors. Ricardo qualified behind him, etc., which, for the first time in a while. And... You know, at the end of the day, it was because the cars in front of him were gone.
Yep.
And the Ferraris fucked up. It wasn't taking pole in an unlikely circumstance and then managing right. to hold onto it. It wasn't an outstanding drive. It was holding on.
It wasn't his most, not managing to hit
Raikkonen.
Yeah.
I'm not a Verstappen hype train rider, and I never have been. I've always said he may turn out to be a good driver. He isn't at the moment. He simply hasn't had enough years in cars to be good. And I think that, I mean, right now, Verstappen this season has the same number of years in cars that Charles Leclerc does.
Yeah, he does.
To put it into perspective. My feeling is that the acceleration is ridiculous in junior drivers. Like, we have to stop the rapid acceleration because it's creating just really stupid racing. And also, there's a huge problem with these complex hybrid power units. You're not seeing drivers change as often. You can't take as many chances with the driver lineup, basically because it's very complex to learn. You have to invest quite a lot to bring a driver into Formula One, not just in terms of bringing them up the junior ranks, but actually literally just teaching them how F1 works. And I would say that... there's lots of reasons for Verstappen is holding on to that position, but... And that he reached it as fast as he did, but the on-track results are not one of them.
Right.
I mean, extreme Max Verstappen fans trundle into my mentions after the French Grand Prix.
Oh, God.
One of them said that, I was saying that Charles Leclerc, you can't compare the idea that Charles Leclerc would get the Ferrari seat with whether Verstappen should have gone into the Red Bull seat, because the experience levels are now equivalent. Certainly not when Max got that Red Bull seat, especially since there was somebody else already in it. Somebody said, and this is the level that the hype has completely overridden sense on this, that in his first year, yes, Charles Leclerc has not put a step wrong, which is wrong. Charles Leclerc has put steps wrong, and he's very open about it. That Max Verstappen didn't. Verstappen got 8 super license penalty points in his first year and openly defied team orders.
This came up again in qualifying because Red Bull were trying to organize that Verstappen could get a tow off Ricardo, and then when they asked Verstappen to do the same thing, that let Ricardo get a tow off of him.
I don't think Red Bull were trying to organize Verstappen to give Ricardo a tow. I don't know, really.
He seemed very agitated about something in Q3 relating to something involving him and something revolving Daniel Ricciardo.
Yeah, so he felt Ricciardo wasn't giving him a good enough tow. And that basically it was not playing nice between the two. Ricciardo felt he didn't have the pace, which he didn't.
Yeah, and that was even before he had broken down. Another mechanical DNF for Daniel Ricciardo and another DNF for Red Bull that kind of put some worried faces on the people at Red Bull when they were basically telling Mats to kind of just, you know, back it off because this may happen to you too. It may happen to you too. Your exhaust may fail as well.
Does Daniel Ricciardo's contract situation, you think, merely highlight this or heighten it?
I don't.
Because, you know, have Helmut Marko saying that there's nowhere else for him to go and that he will sign.
Right.
Oh, I agree with him on one point.
And you have a situation where the front three teams, if one of the Ferraris or Max had stopped on track, then the third car on the podium would have been lapped.
Yeah.
The front three teams are lapping every other car.
Yes.
On a circuit like
Spielberg. As much as McLaren would love to throw all the money that they have at Daniel Ricciardo, that's not going to be enough.
All the money they have is not very much money.
Yeah.
A lot of that money is Alonso money, remember. They do pay him a lot, but he brings in a lot. Ricciardo doesn't come with piss all, because once you take away that Red Bull sponsorship, he's got Australian car sales.
I mean, yeah, for Daniel Ricciardo, it's pretty much re-sign with Red Bull or you're not going to be in Formula One next year.
No, so I think he's got two options, one of which is Renault might genuinely pick him up, because Renault can choose to pay for Daniel Ricciardo, who's out of contract, so they don't have to give Red Bull any money for Daniel.
Yeah.
And they're Renault. They've got shitloads of cash.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or they can choose to pay Red Bull to keep Carlos.
Oh, I see then.
Carlos see is that. Still under contract and they will have to pay Red Bull if they want to keep him. They won't, because the split has been extraordinarily acrimonious.
Right, in case you didn't know, Red Bull are going to Honda after years and years of what we could best describe as a frayed relationship. So, Max Verstappen, he had some fortune go his way. He is starting to turn his form around. This is his fourth podium in five races. Again, he's far from a finished product. He's a bit overhyped. His defense is what is his biggest problem, not so much as overtaking. He's still rough around the edges, and he still doesn't play nice with his teammates. But this is still... it's still an encouraging result to kind of get him back to at least something of the Max Verstappen that we all idealize and as we want to see in our head as being this the next Schumacher, basically. But Dutch, with more orange. Actually, now it's yellow with Jumbo Supermarkets on board. So Verstappen gets his first win of the season, and now we have a case where all three of the big three have won three races through the first nine races. So Red Bull have three, Ferrari have three, Mercedes have three. Was anybody expecting this at the start of the season? I think we all were expecting
I wasn't, at the start of the season. I wasn't expecting Red Bull to have three.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, that one was the big surprise. I know they are still well a ways off in terms of reliability from their cars and their drivers for getting the championship challenge. But again, they can still challenge for the odd race win here and there. They can make things very, very interesting for both Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel.
I mean, as things stand from the record, you could say that Mercedes and Ferrari can also challenge for the odd race win here and there.
Yeah, you're very, very right. Ferrari had a very good
I think the thing that you would say about this year is that, so I think although we're seeing three teams contending for wins, which okay is more than previous years, the budget gap between the people who take the top three prize money and those who don't has become so stark.
Right.
I mean, you have the team who came fourth last year going out in Q3. Admittedly, I don't know what was wrong with Perez, but Perez went... going out in Q1. I always forget it's...
They do salvage this.
Ferrari.
Ferrari have a pretty good race. Kimi Raikkonen starts third. He is eventually able to finish second. There was some worry that they would swap Raikkonen and Vettel around at the end, but I guess they kind of, because, you know, Ferrari does not have a track record of swapping cars at the last lap of an Austrian Grand Prix to give their German championship-leading driver the benefit in terms of championship points. That would never happen.
I've never heard of that. It's never, like suggesting ever. Renault would have a driver deliberately crash.
Oh, I've never heard of such a thing. I've actually never heard of that. Kimi Raikkonen takes second, and Sebastian Vettel, because Lewis Hamilton breaks down behind him, gets 15 points, and he moves back into the lead of the Drivers' Championship by a single point. 146 to Vettel over 145 to Lewis Hamilton. How does he keep doing this? Apart from the fact that he's a really good driver and a very good car.
A lot of variables and circumstance.
Right, and remember, there was still acrimony going into this race because he had picked up a 3-place grid penalty for balking Carlos Sainz during Q3. I guess there were some very strong feelings about this.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Tifosi were and Vettel fans were felt that it shouldn't have. That he shouldn't have incurred the penalty because he's fighting for a championship.
Even Mario Andretti said this.
To Q3. Yeah, it's bullshit though, because like, if it doesn't matter if you both got through, then if the Williams are not ever going to get out of Q1, then does it really matter if you block them?
Yeah,
because like, they're barely
it's
on a lap.
It's ridiculous.
Like,
to
if
have
you're
that
in contention
standpoint.
For a championship and you are on a slow lap, get the fuck out of the way of other drivers. At the end of the day, like I don't know if it was even Renault that particularly complained, but when you are in the way of drivers who are fighting for Q3 and you are comfortably in it, get the fuck out of the way.
Right, and that essentially goes against the point of, like, you know, you don't want to have rules. Hard and fast rules about driver conduct be malleable based on where they are in the driver's championship. This has been talked about a number of times before.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, if Bottas and Hamilton had crashed each other out and it was obviously Hamilton's fault and they decided not to award a penalty because he was in contention for a championship.
Yeah, it'd be ridiculous. It would be ridiculous. I've seen people saying that
since his engine's blown up and he gets a new engine at Silverstone, well, I mean, it's his home race and he's in contention for a championship. He shouldn't really get grid penalties, right?
I don't know. Please.
I've seen people say that he shouldn't get penalized because Carlos Sainz Jr. said it wasn't a big deal. That's ridiculous. You break the rules, you get penalized.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really matter if he thinks it's a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, he would probably quite like a future Ferrari seat. So,
out of all this, Vettel still had a good day, finishes on the podium, takes back the lead of the Drivers' Championship by a single point. And they're not the only Ferrari powered team that had a very good day, because we were waiting for this since the start of preseason. You know, Haas were looking like the most improved team, but we were just waiting for them to have that big weekend, which we all thought was going to happen in Australia until finger trouble happened. Kevin Magnussen had been pretty much scoring all the points, and Romain Grosjean had been getting all the bad luck after he kicked a black cat into a bunch of mirrors through underneath several ladders while tossing the salt shaker over his head. That's to say that Romain Grosjean has had no luck at all. In fact, he's had negative luck. But all of a sudden, it's come good for them. Grosjean finishing a strong fourth. Yes, he was one lap down. We've covered this. The gap between the top three and everything else is pretty bad. But Romain Grosjean back in the points for the first time since Japan last year with a fourth place finish. And Kevin Magnussen with a fifth place finish. That's 22 points on the board for Haas. That's their best ever result. And it puts them up into fifth in the championship and overtakes them past McLaren Renault. Y'all! This is America's team again.
Oh, I get it. Yeah, I mean, so everybody, I really like Haas because I transcribe a lot of Team Boss audio and like no Gunter, no party. I also think, you know, they've got a kind of challenger element to them that I really appreciate in motorsport teams in general. I think Haas come at F1 from an interesting angle. Haas are obviously pretty key in terms of the future of F1 currently, and that Liberty Media will afford Haas the same level of permissions, I suspect, that Ferrari have been historically given, because it's very important to Liberty that there's an American team. Right. It's even more important that they try and bring in more. So, yeah, Haas are a very interesting bit of Formula One. They're a very outspoken bit. Yeah, it's an interesting area. They're also a genuinely challenging customer team, which at the moment, because Force India have had so many problems this year, there kind of isn't really another one. Obviously, McLaren are in the bin. Williams are in the complete bin. I think McLaren are worse than Williams at the moment.
That is a strong, strong take.
But if Alonso was in that Williams, where would it be?
Yeah, you're right. This was not a good week for McLaren in terms of outright pace. I don't know how Fernando Alonso salvaged 8 plates points, but you know, that's why he is the greatest driver in the world. Don't at me.
Because 6 cars retired.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's fine, but hey, you can only in order to finish 8th, you must first finish. As the saying goes. That's not how the saying goes, but you know, it's perfectly fine.
It's the kind of thing I would have said at Le Mans, and to be fair, yeah, it was one of the 6 cars that finished. I would say, I mean, to be fair, he didn't, despite some early indications on like lap 2 that he was quite bored, he didn't clock off early. And he did actually pull his finger out in qualifying this week, which it looked for the first sort of 14 minutes of Q1 like it wasn't going to be asked. I kind of ride on Fernando Alonso a lot, because I've been riding on Fernando Alonso since the early 2000s, and I'm not going to stop now, but it's done with a reasonable amount of affection. But Alonso is one of the drivers that brings the most attention to the sport. He's a driver who can bring attention to any sport. He's a huge personality. He's very good to work with for sponsors, you know, whatever.
In World Rally
but
class.
He's like, the Fernando McLaren partnership has to end.
It can only just continue on into American waters.
Oh dear.
Oh my goodness. But
I don't know. I would be, I mean, I know he wants the triple crown. I would be more interested in seeing Fernando in Super GT. Super Formula.
I think he would go with the former, not so much the latter. By the way, Kevin Magnussen, another top 5 finish, his first since Bahrain. Y'all, Haas are looking good right now. If they could put another something together at Silverstone, they might have something for Renault here, because they're only 13 points back.
Yeah,
and I mean, Renault have big trouble at the moment.
Oh, yeah. Hülkenberg blew an engine. Carlos Sainz was the last car one lap down in 12th with a non-scoring finish. Austria was probably not going to be their track, so they kind of got to hope they get it together at Silverstone.
I mean, Silverstone is much more likely to suit them, but Silverstone is also massively more likely to suit the Toro Rossos. We know that the Toro Rossos can pull out a result when they have that option. Silverstone's actually quite a good track for Hartley. So it's possible he might manage it. If his car can hold it together for fucking minutes, it's possible he might actually kind of come out with the goods in Silverstone. Obviously, it's a track he knows extremely well.
He's won there in WEC before.
Yes, a fair amount, both in LMP2 and LMP1. So, like for sure, Hartley has a good chance in Silverstone, and we know that Gasly's on a complete stormer. So, and they're kind of like the mix-up of the midfield. Sometimes they're at the back, sometimes they're very much mixing at the front. They might well take a step forward on Renault there. Renault don't seem to have the... I mean, Renault have the problem in that at the moment they have the two single most demanding customer teams as their customers.
Right, yeah, and that's never going to be fun. That's never going to be a fun arrangement. This was kind of a day for the midfielders with half of the big three breaking down. We mentioned that Force India didn't have such a good time in qualifying. Esteban Ocon started 11th. Sergio Perez qualified 17th, eventually started 15th after grid penalties were applied. Ocon finished 6th and Sergio Perez finished in 7th. I would say, given the circumstances, that is a pretty damn good day at the office for Force India, a team whose long-term viability we're kind of sort of worried about just a little bit, but they're still hanging tough. To they're 2 points still clear of McLaren Renault. They could easily move it in the top 6 in the Constructors' Championship by the time we get done here with this triple header. Also a good day as well for the Alfa Romeo Saubers. Charles Leclerc finishing in 9th, Marcus Ericsson in 10th. That's Sauber's first double points finish since China of 2015. King, Sauber looked good. Yeah, Force India really looked good today.
Yeah, really good. Charles Leclerc had a big off early in the race and was still able to finish 9th.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah, I mean,
there was...
I think Sauber, so I absolutely agree, Sauber looked good, and it's incredibly good seeing Sauber kind of get back to being a competitive team, I think, and hopefully moving in further forward. Sorry, Alfa Romeo, Sauber.
Sauber Romeo.
I think it was a pretty stinking weekend for Force India on some levels. It was recovered in the race, but Perez out in Q1 is bonkers. And I think they really... I'm worried about Force India. They've been like the little team that could, and this year...
Do they still have time to finish second in the Constructors' Championship, though?
No.
Darn. The dream may still live for one more day, maybe with a change of leadership.
The fact is they have massive financial problems, and we know what happens to Formula One teams when they have massive financial problems.
Look at Williams for an example.
Well, or Lotus.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Would be the most recent example.
The last couple of years of Lotus, what a trash fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. The hope is that they would be able to turn themselves around. Mm-hmm. Maybe Mercedes will finally accept that they need a B team. Maybe something will happen, but at the moment, Force India are just in, you know, it's keeping head above water. And even if that is beginning to clear now, which I suspect it is, like they had to take the money from Liberty at the start of the year, but we're now a bit further through. So I hope that Force India are kind of improving, but that's a huge hit, and that huge hit can be kind of what does for you. If you're not a McLaren and you don't have a kind of legacy brand heritage that's built up and that will just continue to roll in orange coloured checks. But yeah, I mean, 6th and 7th from where they were, brilliant. No question they have extremely high quality drivers.
Oh, goodness, yes. I think now with 200 starts under their belt, and hey, they can always trace it back to Jordan. I think they have a case for some heritage points. It's... no, they don't. But that one can dream. King, tossing it over to you for a second. Dre gave this race a solid 8 out of 10 on Twitter. Just for the kind of shit showish elements. How would you rate this Austrian Grand Prix?
I'd probably rate it the same, maybe half point higher, 8.5. Like, it was a good watch. It was something that had a lot of tension. There was certainly, it had its wheel-to-wheel moments. I wouldn't say it's the greatest race ever, but it was a good watch. It was a good watch on Sunday.
Worth rewatching, I feel, which reminds me, I should probably get around to rewatching it when I'm a little more conscious, shall we say. Hazel, your assessment of the race, rated on like whatever scale, or just, you know, briefly sum up, you know, how you thought the race went? We're working away.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would give it about a 6 out of 10.
I get it there, like, you know, if not for the kind of retirements here, there would still be some elements where it would drag and lull a bit, and, you know, maybe we do inflate the scores a little bit. I will give it, I'll meet you all at the middle. I'll give it a solid 7 hours of sleep caught up on out of 10. All right. Well, Formula One was not the only measure of entertainment. That was not the only part of the docket that we had.
I just want to put in like really early 10 out of 10. Oh, for this item, 10 out of 10.
Oh, yes. This is where, you know, we're going to start talking about Formula 2 and GP3. Yes, it's time for NXT TakeOver Spielberg. Now, the hottest driver on the Formula 2 circuit, in terms of performance, attractive points, that's always subjective and subject to the person's taste. George Russell took pole in for the feature race and went on to win it convincingly after a subdued start from everybody. Yes, rolling single file starts behind the safety car for both the Austrian and Britain race meetings of the FIA Formula 2 Championship. This in response to the numerous clutch failures that have been happening off the standing starts. So for the first time since 2005, when this series was known as GP2, yes, continuity matters, Formula 2 is going rolling starts. Now, a lot of people felt like this was the only reasonable measure that could have been done. Obviously, the clutch failures were becoming a talking point to where it was taking away from some of the genuinely brilliant racing after the start. But so many drivers were stalling the cars afterwards that, you know, basically they felt like something needed to be done. And Louis Delatraz was one of the drivers, said, you know, this isn't really the ideal solution. You know, other drivers are just making more mistakes than usual. But we do have rolling starts for this round and for the third leg of this triple header while the series sorts it out. Many people thought that, you know, these drivers just couldn't handle that sort of thing. I thought they did pretty all right with it. And George Russell didn't seem to have too much trouble when he won his fourth race of the season, ahead of Lando Norris in second and Antonio Foucault in third. But I don't think that was the big talking point. Hazel, I think you and I, we both need to talk about one Artem Markolov. Holy fucking Jesus, that pass.
Oh, and then another pass later that lap to snatch away reverse grid pole.
Oh my God. So that pass, he was four wide with three other cars, and he swiped
on the grass.
With two wheels on the grass. Artem Markolov, you are absolutely ridiculous.
He knew he didn't need to save the tires. So in the last few corners of the last lap, he had fresh tires anyway. His tires were better than anyone else's, so why not run them through the lawn? I mean, the thing is, and this goes back a little to what I was saying about Max and Charles, like, when Artem Markolov was first in GP2, yeah, he sucked. He was dreadful. Yeah. He was the very definition of a pay driver. But, you know, the last 2 years he got, or the last 3 years he got the GP2 win in Monaco. He then went on to be a very convincing second to Charles Leclerc last year. Mm-hmm. And he is demonically good at overtaking. There's a few drivers who have come out of Russian time who have the same qualities. Mitch Evans and before him Sam Bird are both Russian time alumnus or alumni. Mm-hmm. And they are both incredibly good at really great, like unbeatable overtaking moves, even against people defending incredibly hard. And I don't know if it's something in the team or if it's just knowledge that's passed down or what, but he's just joyous to watch. There is a real extraordinary brilliance to the way that he can line something up and just take advantage of it. The car, yeah. I mean, and we do have to talk about the F2 car, and certainly Russian time has struggled with it. This is the first year of the new car, although it's the second year of it being called F2. And generally the teams are really, it's a slightly more complex car, it's a slightly more complex steering wheel, and it has higher data demands. And F2 teams are just very much struggling to handle that. They just don't really have the budget and the processing power and the time to be able to do that. I mean, like, you must remember that Formula One teams get 3 free practices and an overnight session. Formula Two teams get 1 free practice that's quite short and not at a representative time, and then they qualify later that day.
Yeah, so not a lot of on-track time for this car.
No, and there's no time to change setup and things. And then you have, obviously, the clutch failures, the start failures that have caused, following considerable outburst by multiple F2 drivers after the race in Le Castellet, and a lot of support from drivers online. I mean, you know, these guys are paying for their places. Every single F2 driver is paying for their place. This is not a paid series. These are juniors. They pay for it. And whether they're paying for it in sponsorship, whether their family is putting up money, however they're doing it, they are putting up phenomenal amounts of money a year. And they'll be having to work towards that and to pleasing sponsors and doing all kinds of things in order to do that. And if your car is never seen on track because it stalls every time at the first lap, then, you know, you're not going to get very much sponsorship. It's also completely wrecking, because unless you win it in your rookie season now, you can fuck off from F1.
Right. Yeah, pretty much.
So the drivers are under tremendous pressure, and if your car fails every fucking time, rightly the drivers are pissed off. They're frustrated, and I think
there was considerable angst, especially on the side of Trident Sioux drivers, who it should be said, Arjun Maini, who was easily the most vocal of the drivers, who was upset after Le Castellet. It doesn't show in the results because he only finished 14th in the feature and 10th in the sprints, but his car looked genuinely much better than it did in recent races. And Santino Ferrucci also got a double points finish out of this, 10th in the feature and 7th in the sprint. It's almost like maybe they had a bit of a valid point. Probably the less said about Nyck de Vries race, the better. He would have crashed it out on lap 7, which forced the first of 2 safety cars, the second coming when Jack Aitken spun and crashed on lap 19. Those are 2 big body blows to their title hopes, as de Vries and Aitken, who were now slide to 7th and 8th in the championship. De Vries now, if I'm doing the math right here, he's 7 points out of the lead of the standings. So it is Russell from Norris from Fuoco on the podium of the feature race. And in the sprint, we had Artem Markelov doing things again. He won sprint race from the reverse grip pole. I did not catch the sprint race, but I heard he drove brilliantly, and it came on the day that Russia knocked Spain out of the World Cup.
I think... Artem's command of the sprint race was absolutely, again, tires. He is the best tire manager in almost any series I've seen. And, you know, he got to nearly the end of the feature. He only had to pit on the very last few laps. And certainly the sprint race, he didn't have to pit to it, but a few other cars did. Because the tires were blistering, the same kind of blistering that you saw in F1. And, I think... Norris had a rotten time at Spielberg. He did also in F3. He was also crashed out. It was where he didn't quite take the title race early. And I think you have to look at Artem's mastery of that race, or that the command of that race. He's not just a good scrapper. He's not just a good overtaker. He completely managed the race. Russell did an incredible drive. From 8th and just absolutely stormed up to 2nd within the first few laps and held it, which now puts him ahead of Norris in the standings.
Yes, by 10 points. It's now 132 to Russell, 122 to Norris, who, after that great start, we had pretty much assumed that Lando Norris had this title in the bag. It's been a little bit cold for him lately. He hasn't won since the feature race to start the season in Bahrain. He's had 4 podiums since, but now he's had 2 non-scoring results at the Le Castellet feature and at the Spielberg Sprint that have kind of tanked his results just a little bit. It's very interesting at the top because there's a bit of separation between Norris and Russell, Russell and Norris at the top. But then for third place in the championship, you have Markelov at 94 points, Albon at 89. He had a very good weekend to bounce back from the troubles of recent rounds. Sete Câmara, fifth. He's at 86 points despite missing the Monaco round. Had a great weekend as well. Antonio Fuoco, another solid weekend for him. He's now up to 6th in the championship. And Nyck de Vries at 75 points. So just between 3rd and 7th, there are 19 points covering it. That could be very, very good. Hazel, we do not mean to keep you too long. I know you've got to go here. Just real quick, any closing remarks that you have for us?
Just to say that it's really good to see Jake Hughes. I know we're talking about F2, but Jake Hughes has come back in GP3. He was in GP3 the year before last, went to F3, had a mediocre time, and came back to GP2 when probably it should have been F2. But, you know, the funding gamble as always, and it's good to see him winning again in GP3. Russell taking the championship lead. He took the championship lead here in GP3 and went on to win it. I don't think he subsequently lost it from here. So, game on, Norris. And you know, there's still, actually, the thing you have to remember about F2 is that there's 2 races every weekend, yeah. So things can flip on one weekend. The only other thing I want to mention was I know you're moving on to this, so slightly spoilers, but I know we're moving on to discussing an electric car taking a hill climb record. I just, obviously, as a Formula E journalist, I wanted to say that I'm really glad to see Formula E cars taking on hill climbing. I'm really glad to see electric vehicles taking on hill climbing. Obviously, the point of hill climbing back in the day was to show that you could gear a car to have torque, that you could actually get it up a hill. Electric motor torque is massive compared to that of combustion cars, so it's super exciting to see electric vehicles taking on that challenge and to see really like the advantage of where they are compared to even the most advanced combustion cars.
Absolutely.
And yes, thank you for having me, and I will hopefully be back with you soon.
Yes, absolutely, the pleasure is all ours, honestly. Hazel, thank you so much for joining. Me and King have got this to the end. Please take care. Hope all is well.
Thank you, dudes. Bye.
See ya.
Absolutely. Hazel Southwell joining us, noted Formula E journalist, there to join us for our recap of the Formula 1, Formula 2, and GP3. This is the Motorsport 101 podcast. We are just wrapping up here from what we call NXT TakeOver Spielberg. George Russell wins the feature race in Formula 2, with Markelov winning the sprint race, and George Russell has now moved into the lead of the Formula 2 Drivers' Championship. Callum Ilott from pole position won the feature race in the GP3 series, and with that and his sixth place finish in the sprint, he now leads the championship. Second place man Antoine Hubert did not score points in either of the two races. Leonardo Pulcini, a bit of a surprise from my vantage point, got two podiums out of this weekend. He's now third in the championship, but it's still been an all ART Racing benefit. They've won 5 out of the 6 races in GP3. They're still very good at this series, aren't they, King?
Yeah, all this year is making me excited for is next year when the merger happens between GP3 and Formula 3. It is going to be the invasion angle, but what it should have been.
Right, and maybe Dan Ticktum will not get hit from behind this time. That's another story for another episode. Goodness gracious. All in all, fun weekend on Austria, and we still have no definitive idea what iTime is. I thought it was just a glasses sales company, like a lens crafters. Apparently, this is crypto mining.
It might be. It might be illegal crypto
Nothing
mining.
Nothing would surprise me. I wouldn't be surprised if, like, Specsavers was mining like crypto mining at this point, or lens crafters.
Oh, my God.
Goodness. Should we, as we have already covered a lot from the rolling hills of Austria, shall we then move into some other rolling hills not too far away, specifically the green hell of the Nürburgring Nordschleife? Now, when Porsche brought the 919 Evo to do some demo laps alongside the record-setting Porsche 962, I believe it's the 962 that the previous track record of Stefan Beloff, the late great sports car and Formula One driver, the one that stood for many, many years. We all just kind of envisioned, yeah, but what if, after beating the lap record at Spa-Francorchamps, what if the Porsche 919 farewell tour included one flat-out run around the Nürburgring Nordschleife to see how fast a modern race car could tackle the Nordschleife? Well, they did bring it back. They brought in Timo Bernhard, one of their most experienced drivers around the Nürburgring Nordschleife, and not only did he break the record, he just crumpled it up and incinerated it. He destroyed this record.
Oh my God, like, I knew it was going to be fast. I heard rumors that it was going to be that fast, but I did not believe it was going to be that fast. Oh, yeah.
So, you said you were watching the record lap, because, again, there were multiple attempts, and they had pretty much, they had basically been chipping away. Eventually, they got to a final time after setting a 5:24. They got to a 5:19:55. Again, that's 5 minutes, 19 seconds around the famed Nürburgring Nordschleife. That is ungodly quick.
That is otherworldly quick. Oh my God. Just, like, the old record was 6 minutes 11. It was the pole position time that Stefan Beloff set for the Nürburgring 1,000 kilometers in 1983. And yes, they destroyed it.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, so that record stood for 35 years. And as big-time top-flight racing moved away from the Nordschleife, we thought that record would never be beaten. And here's the scary thing. The impression that I got from this was that Timo Bernhard, who is a Le Mans champion, who's won a lot of the big endurance races. He's won a World Endurance Championship title. He's still very good, and even in the twilight of his career. Timo said, basically, from what I understand, that 919 was just a good warm-up.
Yep, that was just a good warm-up. Like, I assume a bit of it was in jest, but again, this is the Nürburgring Nordschleife. This track is insanely difficult, insanely dangerous, especially in, you know, cars that, you know, in the 919 Evo Tribute, which is the bleeding edge of automotive performance in terms of competitive automotive performance.
Right. It was breathtaking. Like, I've got to go watch that lap. You were watching it on a repeat for several minutes, and I don't blame you. Here's another run that we need to watch as well. 7 minutes, 57 seconds, 0.148. This is the first sub-8-minute run of the Pikes Peak Hill Climb, which, yes, it's been paved over now, so it's no longer the dirt roads that Ari Vatanen once drove in his Peugeot way back in the day, but it's still pretty awesome to see this record from an electric race car, the Volkswagen IDR, driven by Romain Dumas, who's previously won the event, shattering Sebastian Loeb's old record.
Yeah, like, this had a different aura around it in terms of people. It seemed like they were just aiming for the outright electric record. The overall record seemed to be, it was a genuine question if they would ever get close to it or not, but no,
yeah,
they destroyed it.
Yeah, so for reference, the old record was set by Sebastian Loeb, the greatest, most successful rally driver of all time. He did it in a Peugeot 208 Pikes Peak car with 8 minutes, 13 seconds. Many people thought this record wouldn't ever get touched. Volkswagen put together a car that could do not only that, it could break it by almost 20 seconds.
It was
scary. This was beautiful. And can I just say, with those Gran Turismo stickers on the windscreen, you definitely want to see this car in GT Sport. Come on, I'll even pay for it. I know it's free. I would pay for it if you wanted me to.
Oh God, like.
Yeah, and to put it into perspective, the previous EV record, this is all they wanted to do. They just wanted to beat 8:57:118 set by Ries Millen in 2016. That's all they wanted to do at first.
That's like, man, they showed up to... They wanted to, like, just, you know, nail up a picture frame with a sledgehammer.
Like, as cynical as we get about motorsports sometimes, we just kind of need to take a step back and realize when stuff like this happens, it can create some truly amazing things. It can create once-in-a-lifetime moments, all in the span of the same week.
By technically the same car company.
Yes. Like, it's pretty awesome. I know we're all kind of sad that, you know, Audi and Porsche had to pull out of LMP1 and the WC in Le Mans, and Volkswagen is still kind of in trouble, but, you know, hey, if these are, I gotta say, this is the best corporate apology I've ever heard of.
Yeah. BP, step your game up.
Come on, Wells Fargo, where's your LMP1 hybrid?
Though, oh man. It seemed like it hit, like, there were hints that, oh, we could be going back to the 1930s era of we're just going to be breaking records for breaking records' sake, but Mercedes has already pretty much said that, yeah, we can't afford to try to take a Formula One car to the Nürburgring and beat the record, according to Toto Wolff, but Toto Wolff also claims that Bottas could break the record if they did it. Again, Toto Wolff, put your money where your mouth is. If you can't make claims if you're not willing to back them up.
Right. A sub-5 lap around the Nordschleife. I need to catch myself. Should we move on then to, well, it's not in the set list because I couldn't fit into one Discord message. We had some good racing in America. We're gonna start with we're gonna talk with hashtag slab job. If you haven't seen it, the last lap of the NASCAR race at Chicagoland, this being Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s full-time broadcasting debut, Kyle Busch and Kyle Larson are going for the lead of the motor race. Larson tries to move Busch out of the way, coming out of turn two. He gains the lead. Kyle Busch is having none of that, so driving into turn three, he goes deep. He goes way deep. He punts Kyle Larson into a spin as Busch is about to wreck into the wall, and Kyle Busch takes the victory. Kyle Larson comes home in second. Everybody immediately thought this was one of the best finishes ever. I think there were better races.
It was good.
Certainly, especially in a time where NASCAR needs all the attention it can get nowadays, this was a very good finish. And props as well to Kyle Busch for doing the tears emote to the camera as everybody is trying to boo him out of Chicagoland. Wonderful.
Man. But I've seen the memes just pour in. Like, not like I hate like Kyle Busch, just like, man, this was a moment level of memes.
Oh goodness. Yeah. And I also want to remark as well, like, we're seeing not entirely unprecedented, but you know, between Kyle Busch winning five races this year, Kevin Harvick winning five races, Martin Truex still looking as good as when he won the championship last year. He's won three races. They have three times as many wins as the rest of the field combined.
Yeah, there is truly a big three in NASCAR.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty wonderful. We also had some good racing at the IMSA 6 hours of the Glen. We had some friends of the show there as well, who, if they were conscious and made good choices, they probably would have seen Stephen Simpson, pretty much a gentleman driver in the context of IMSA prototype racing. Roundup Juan Pablo Montoya, who was 2/3 of the way to the Triple Crown, and Jordan Taylor, the reigning series champion, with an incredible three wide pass to give JDC Miller Motorsports the victory overall in that race. And that's something of an upset because they are a true pro-am team in a series that is leaning towards the all-pro DPI entries.
Yeah, and man, I pray for the people who actually went to that race because it was a hot one in upstate New York.
Oh,
yeah,
it God. Was a hot one. Oh my goodness, that's Mikhail Misha Goikberg, that's Chris Miller, and that's Steven Simpson, who took the win in the number 99 Gaines Co. Red Dragon of J.D. Miller Motorsports. It's only the second time a global LMP2 car has won in this current IMSA era of IMSA prototype racing. Here's the thing, that same team could have easily won it last year.
Yeah,
because they were very close. They were chomping at the bit to pass in 2017, but this time they did not leave anything on the table. And Motorsport as well. You're right. Thank you, Henry Chapman, for inserting all that stuff. Man, they've been close. They are the true giant slayers. This number 99 team, which is really awesome to see. Especially as some had suggested that IMSA should just move away from trying to make the pro-am global LMP2 teams try and compete with the all-pro DPI teams.
Yeah, it truly shows that doesn't matter if you're pro-am car, those guys could still go out there, put on a good race, and maybe steal some wins from people.
Oh, goodness. Oh, man. What is Motorsport Network doing? They have a new app.
Oh. I wish Dre were here for this. I wish Dre were here for this.
So this is a new creation from the Motorsport Network. They've launched the Pit Stop Betting app, where basically it's as it sounds here. It'll offer betting cards across 10 motorsport series at launch. two wheels and four. So this all looks very good, except for the fact that you kind of got to realize that the people who own Motorsport Network also kind of had vested interest into other teams that compete in a lot of these championships that are up for betting. But what's wrong about that?
What's wrong about that? Oh, yeah. Man, the conflicts. The conflicts, y'all. But, again, apparently you could bet real... Like, I don't know what they mean by this. You could bet real money, you could bet virtual money, and you could also bet virtual currency. I don't know what that means.
Oh my goodness. So, oh my god, can you win loot boxes out of this?
Probably.
That would not surprise me. Yeah, there were great quotes from Zach Brown, Motorsport Network's chairman, and also McLaren F1 CEO.
Yes, the quote in question, the Pit Stop betting app adds another dimension to our portfolio of products and services for the motorsport fan. But more importantly, this radical new app, with its focus on rewarding entertainment, will set new standards not just for motorsport, but I believe more broadly sports betting in general, with its refreshing fun and demystifying approach to betting.
Oh man, they've chocked it full of so many buzzwords. Man, that's just perfect.
So right now the app is available only in Britain, apparently, because I've tried to download
Which makes sense, because we haven't fully rolled out legalized sports betting in all 50 states yet. But we're working on it.
We're working on it. Things are going to be so awkward when McLaren gets a full-time team in IndyCar. Because we know America does not have, you know, a fraught history with sports betting in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, you can just for the sake of posterity's sake, you can play on Formula One, Formula E, MotoGP, the World Endurance Championship, NASCAR, the World Rally Championship, and World Rallycross Championship, IndyCar, and the WTCR, the former WTCC.
Okay, one note I do have to make. It would legitimately be fun to bet on World Rallycross, not gonna lie.
Oh my goodness, yeah. Notice that IndyCar is missing.
IndyCar is not missing.
Oh, so you can bet on IndyCar.
You can bet on IndyCar.
When does this get to the States? Damn you, Zach Brown. This just in from some people who have watched more World Rallycross than I have this year. Just put Johan Kristoffersen in. If you're that confident in it, I don't think you're going to win any money off of that. I'm just going to put that out there.
Yeah, he's won 75% of the races. Keyword, 75%. Yeah. That's not all. That's not all.
Oh, goodness. We had Super GT this past weekend, so I'm going to do my best to try and summarize this. You can watch the race in full on Nismo TV. If you have not watched it, please tune out for the next 2 to 3 minutes as I try to sum up what happened. Okay, here we go. So, Lexus, they hadn't won a race all through the first three rounds of the season. As it turns out, they came away with a podium clean sweep as Kamui Kobayashi and Heikki Kovalainen for Lexus Team Sard took the victory. But this was a wild race where we had essentially almost a four-car battle for the lead of the race with about 10 laps to go. The number six Waco's LC500 of Kazuya Oshima and Felix Rosenqvist had a genuine chance to win. They were moving up through the field with great quickness. But then in the second half of the race, Yuhi Sekiguchi and the number 36 AU Toms LC500, which he shared with Le Mans champion Kazuki Nakajima, we can say that now.
Yes.
Sekiguchi was pounding out fast lap after fast lap, and he was right on the back bumper in the final lap until his car ran out of fuel. And he just looked so utterly devastated, as he damn well should have, because that was a race that he easily could have won. Like, Kobayashi and Sekiguchi, two of the most aggressive drivers from Japan that I know of, going wheel to wheel, going into turn four at Chang International Circuit, which, for those of you who don't know, if you need a more familiar analogy, it's basically like if they just dropped 130R into the middle of Thailand. So that kind of gives you a level of the danger that that corner entails. I don't know what it is about this seemingly featureless Herman Tilke circuit in the middle of nowhere, even by Thailand standards, but the racing there is good, and it's a shame that the attendance has steadily declined each year. They only got 30,000 people, just short of 30,000 people, for the whole weekend. 20,000 on Sunday.
Yeah, it's... I guess it's a case of Herman Tilke finally gets essentially a blank canvas to work with, and he makes a pretty interesting circuit against all odds. But unfortunately, those odds also cause there to be low attendance at that circuit.
Right. From what I understand, this is six hours to 8 hours drive from Buriram, Thailand, to Bangkok and vice versa. And with MotoGP also being on this circuit's calendar, most people are going to figure, like, we can only go to one race, and if we're only going to one, well, might as well make it MotoGP.
Yeah.
GT300 also had some pretty good times, and in the end of that, the number 11 Gainer Tanak's Nissan GTR. First win for the new Nissan GTR with Katsuyuki Hironaka and Hironobu Yasuda taking the victory. Hironaka, by the way, he's driven for Team Gainer since 2009, and in that time, he's won in a Ferrari, he's won in an Audi R8, he's won in two different generations of Mercedes GT3 cars, and now he's won in a Nissan, all in this time frame. That's pretty awesome.
Oh my God. That, I barely know many drivers who have recent records that prodigious.
Yes, so we have new championship leaders out of all this. Kovalainen moves to the top of the GT500 Drivers' Championship with his win. Remember, Kamui Kobayashi missed a round, so he's not going to get all the points Kovalainen has. Hironaka and Yasuda move to the top of the GT300 Drivers' Championship. As well, shout-outs as well to 18-year-old Rotomo Miata for getting his first podium, because I'm very proud of him and want to see him do well. Like, it's... like, I'm not going to lie, it's really, really awesome having a driver who is very, very fast, very, very young, and could potentially be a major star of the future and a future champion who just so happens to be on the autism spectrum. Like, that's really, really cool. And he was having a good time at this whole event. Shout-outs as well to the Chang Circuit organizers for basically giving away all the champagne on the podium to the GT300 drivers and leaving none for the 500 drivers to take it. You get no beer if you drive the fastest cars. You get some beer if you drive the slightly less fast cars. It was a good time. Please watch it on Nismo TV. You will enjoy it, and you will have a good time. We've hit all the high points from Austria, the Nürburgring, Pikes Peak, Chicago, Watkins Glen, Buriram. We got the third part of an F1 triple header coming up at the British Grand Prix at Silverstone, the most important venue if you judge it only by the face value of an average general admission ticket. Oh goodness, yes. We got NASCAR at Daytona again. We have IndyCar is back. IndyCar is back at Toronto, I believe. No, it's no. Iowa this weekend?
Yeah, Iowa. Iowa Corn, what, 400? Oh my God, I forgot the distance.
Oh goodness, yeah, it's the Iowa Corn 300.
Okay. Close
enough. Yeah, we've got more packed racing, and Dre will be back with us. Thank you so much to everybody who's tuned in to this episode of the Motorsport 101 podcast. Remember, you can find all of our works, both in audio and written form, at motorsport101.com. If you want to back this show financially, you can back us at patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to every show we put out for Motorsport 101 and for Bike Live. You're at facebook.com/motorsport101, youtube.com/motorsport101. Our show's Twitter handle is motorsport_101. And if you want to follow us personally, we are at Harrison101HD, at Ryan Eric King, at RJ O'Connell, and at H Southwell FE for Hazel, who did have to leave us. A family emergency going on. Definitely hope all is well, but we definitely thank her for joining us for the time that she was here. And with that about wrapped up, assuming we have no other late omissions.
Nope.
All right. Then just like And just like Messi and Ronaldo's World Cup runs, I believe it's time to end it. Thank you very much for listening. For Hazel Southwell and Brian Eric King, and for the absent Andre Harrison, who will be back, I'm RJ O'Connell. Thank you very much for listening to the Motorsport 101 podcast. We will catch you next time. Later, y'all.
Bye.
You are the world champion!
Sorry, I had to recompose myself. I got slide jobbed.
Buddy, usually got to pay $50 or more for that.
Man, if we ever get a $50 tier, it has to be named Slide Job.
And that's the part, that's the thing that ruins us.